step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Spoilers ahead for The Fableman. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Script Department. I'm joined by Millie today. We've just been over on YouTube where she's done a very nice, concise 10-minute review of The Fablemans, spoiler-free. So if you haven't heard that, pop over to YouTube and give that a watch. Otherwise, you can follow us all over the place. We're all over the internet these days. We're on TikTok. You know we're on TikTok, Millie? We're on TikTok now. It's very exciting.
All right. I'll check it out.
It's a lot on my face. We need more people's faces on there, really. But, you can follow that if people choose to. We're also on Instagram, all the places like that. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're on Audible. I really like the fact we're on Audible for some reason. It makes me feel very fancy. I think that's really cool. We're all over the place. So, and you can also check us out, check out our global network of screenwriters over at thescriptdepartment.net. We've also recently relaunched the script reading podcast, which is really exciting. We've got some great stories coming your way. So if you're into screenwriting and you want to hear the kind of thing that our global network of screenwriters are producing all of the time, then you can check us out over there. Millie, you've written one yourself, I believe. In fact, I know you have because I read it.
I have. Yeah, it's just been released, actually. It sounded brilliant. Really love listening to it.
Well, that excellent stuff. So check out Millie's handiwork over on the script reading podcast there. But we're not here to talk about that today, Millie. We're here to talk
we'll put about that aside today. Yes.
We'll just allow that shameless plug to pass us by.
I wasn't trying to deliberately promote myself. Yeah.
Sorry, I think you got away with it. I started it. I started the plug, so I think you got away with that one. It's not too bad. So we're here to talk about The Fablemans today. You obviously gave us your review over on YouTube there, and you know, we're pretty positive about it. I equally, I'm really, really positive about this film. I came away, I cried a lot more than I expected to during this film. Lots of, and you know what? Did you at the beginning, because we can spoil it now, so we're safe. At the beginning of your showing where you were in the theatre, did you have the little recorded message from Steven Spielberg?
Yes, I know it was. So, I wasn't expecting that as well. So when I listened to that, it did bring a tear to your eye, didn't it? Throughout the whole film, anyway. Usually, I'll sort of be at the cinema and just taking it all in. But I'm sure pretty much the whole time I was at the cinema, I was at, because I was just how brilliant everything was, and every single second of that film meant something. And it just had so many meanings. Every scene, every bit of dialogue, every word just had so many meanings and also meant something.
Yeah, it's very layered. I think it's very you're absolutely right. There's so much in there, and there's so much for Spielberg fans to see and to unpack, and we'll go into that a little bit in a minute, because there's a lot of references there I want to talk about. But I think that little for those of you that perhaps didn't, I assume it's gone out nationwide, worldwide in front of this film, because it'd be pretty strange if it didn't. But if it didn't, for whatever reason, Spielberg is it's a lovely, lovely shot of him just basically standing there and saying, thank you for coming to see this film in the cinema the way it was meant to be. And I sat back, I leaned back in my chair, already welled up, and I just thought to myself, okay, all right, Steven, I'm here to go. Let's do this. Take me where you want to take me, because I'm invested. It was, and I think that it's so in keeping with the themes of this film, the fact that it is the by far the most personal project he's worked on and ever produced, and the fact that it is semi-autobiographical, semi-important in that is semi-autobiographical. I think it did. Do you think it changed the way you saw the film? Because it did for me.
Yeah. And also, it was like you said, it was like a thank you to his parents, or like they say, a letter to his parents, or a gift. thanking them for supporting him through his filmmaking journey. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the film really did everyone. It was just so brilliant. It was so emotive. It was so, I think what got me is that it was so relatable.
Yeah.
I could just relate to so many things. What I quite liked was it had ideas about sort of perseverance, not giving up on your dream, not letting sort of just maybe the outside world sort of have their opinions on what you want to do in your life.
Yeah.
And I spoke earlier about sort of the theme is of sort of what is your calling. So it's very sort of, this film brought to the idea that whatever is your calling, you stick to that, and other people have their own callings of what they want to do in life, but we're all different and unique. But I thought that was really interesting, and I really took that away. I also think with what I've really wanted to be desperate to talk about is the dialogue. I think the dialogue was so literally, I was so excited.
Yeah, literally.
I thought with the dialogue, there were so many, every line had about like so many meanings to one line, like probably three meanings each line of dialogue, and meant so many different things about, sort of told so many things about the character, sort of the world, the views, even told us something about sort of filmmaking. I thought you would, I was sitting there just trying to pick apart the dialogue, because there was just so many things that were being said in one line. And one of the things I picked up, I thought it had a lot of, there was a lot of sort of almost like metaphors in there as well. Like, I know the main protagonist, Sammy, his uncle comes to stay.
That's my favourite bit.
Yeah, he works in the circus, or used to work in a circus, and he's having a conversation with Sammy, and he goes, art is like looking into the lion's mouth.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really good about how he's saying about how dangerous art is. And then one of the main things, which I know is in the trailer, they say, art and family, it will tear you in two. And I think for so many filmmakers, that really hits home, because sort of wherever you are creatively, if you're sort of a filmmaker and you're on set, like there's that sacrifice of not being with your family and having to make that choice and those sacrifices. And I really think that that's what, for me, that's what he was referring to. I just thought it was so brilliant. So much was said in the dialogue.
I think it's the central point of the film, and I think that's why this comes so early on in, because it is quite surprisingly early, actually, in the piece. I think on reflection, I think his Judd Hirsch, Uncle Boris, Judd Hirsch, his appearance in this, I think is probably quite early on in the film, but it really sets things in motion in a slightly different way. And I think that it, I think he's kind of the mouthpiece here, standing there and saying, this is what this is about. This is going to be about, because you've got Mitzi, his mother, who is a kind of a frustrated artist who's given up on these various different things. Then Bert, his father, is not an artist per se, but I would say he's very successful in his career, and what he does is an art of its own, which I think is why it's so ironic when he turns around to Sammy and says, you know, it's a hobby, all this, that, and the other. And I think the Judd Hirsch character and Uncle Boris really does step forward and make this point in a really moving way. And I think that's why, I wonder if this film hits home in the same way for people who are not artistic or creative or filmmakers, because I know that this hasn't been, it's not set the box office alight, this film. It's been critically extremely well received and is, you know, all this, that, and the other. But of course, critics are involved in the film industry, and the people who would give out awards are involved in this industry. They're artistic in one way or another. And I wonder if this would hit home in the same way for those who perhaps aren't, because for me, I walked away from this film feeling quite seen, to use the modern vernacular for it. And I was talking to my wife about it afterwards, and I was saying, you know, like, I'm not saying I've sacrificed my, you know, my marriage for my art or anything like that. It's not that dramatic, but there are plenty of occasions where I've not been able to do something because I've had to, you know, I've been working on something else and doing something. And I think art from trauma which is of course what this film is, that, you know, looking at the layers of this, the conception of this movie and the whole idea of this, this is art from trauma. This is Spielberg looking at his childhood and the trauma that came from it. And the, you know, all of Spielberg's movies are about family units and family falling apart. He's obsessed with it. And you can see this is the genesis. This is why, because of what happened with his parents here. And you can see art from trauma across this whole thing. The fact that he is traumatized by the cinema initially, and then Mitzi, you know, it finds a way to tell him, no, it's okay. You can control this by creating film. You can do this. And he seeks to do it first, and then she gives him a camera. Art from trauma, you know, and then that trauma is transferred into something else. Film is this way of controlling, but also of understanding your environment. And then everything that comes afterwards, art from trauma, the idea of the bully later on, him capturing the bully in this artistic way, it's art from trauma. Like, this whole film is about finding this thing, going through something traumatic, and then finding the artistic expression in it. And I think it's, I think that's why I found it so moving. Is that, do you think that's, it's at the heart of it? Is that something that jumped out to you as well? Or am I kind of...
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Especially when I write, it's even sort of good experiences or bad experiences, whichever, you take that and you channel that into your writing, and you could really sense that, couldn't you? And like you were saying about the scenes with the story thread about the bully, what I liked about this film, that not only it was a coming of age story with Sammy sort of in the world with his family, wanting to be a filmmaker and following his passion in that journey. Surrounding that was all these other subplots and story threads that were really sort of made the film, sort of tightened the film and made it sort of even more detailed and brilliant. Like, we had a storyline with the bully, always sort of bullying Sammy. We had Sammy getting his first girlfriend. I just thought those subplots really sort of gave Sammy a more human, well, he was a very humanized character anyway, but it really sort of made him very genuine.
It's really interesting the way the whole speaking of the bully and the, his first girlfriend and things like that, you have this appalling anti-Semitism that is woven into it, but it isn't at any point sort of, it never feels like it's the main thing, you know. It's never kind of the, this isn't the reason he's making this film, he's not doing it for that, but it is something that happened, and it felt very matter of fact, I think. Do you know what I mean? I think it's,
it was woven in along the way, but yeah, ultimately it was a story about Sammy and his relationship with his parents and his family, really. So that's what I thought.
I think it's interesting. Yeah. To come back to the screenplay, so this is a Tony Kushner who is is writing with Spielberg here, longtime collaborator, made all kinds of things together at this point. And this is, I heard this story, I was listening to an interview earlier on, and I can't remember where I heard it, and I'm really sorry, because I would normally credit the place I heard it, so I'm sorry not doing that. But that apparently this came about back in 2005. They started really talking about it. Well, no, the idea kind of began in 2005, and it's grown and grown and grown. And they had an argument on the set of West Side Story, and Spielberg kind of went, oh, okay, well, we'll do that almost as a peace offering, I think. And the way they did this, which I think is really interesting, is they sat down together, and he kind of interviewed, Kushner interviewed Spielberg, and found all of these interesting kind of stories and things like that, and then wrote a narrative around it, and ended up writing what amounts to, I think it was an 80-page kind of prose novella, and then they pulled it apart and did something with that, and he went and did that on his own. And I think it's really interesting that that's what they did. They didn't go from a place of, hey, I want to make a story about film, or maybe they did, but it doesn't feel like they went from, I want to make a story about a filmmaker, I want to make a story about you being young. They went from these extraordinary family experiences. And I think if there's a lesson there, we always like to try and find lessons here at the Script Department. We like to find lessons in screenwriting and things like that. And I think the lesson in that is that it's character first. Like they went to the characters, they found those characters, they found those story beats, and then they connected them to one another. And I think it's a really interesting way of working. Do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there were so many obstacles, which I think as a writer, you at the cinema, you wouldn't, you try and, like I say, pick it apart and go, that's an obstacle, that's this, that's that, because we're sort of a little bit technically minded. But there were so many obstacles in there that really sort of brought conflict and carried the story. Like, for example, there's Sammy's mother and father, Mitzi. So Mitzi's the one sort of always supporting Sammy, whereas his dad is still supportive, but referring to his creative passion as a hobby. So there's already a conflict there. And then we've got sort of more things. We've got like a plot twist in the middle, which is sort of the almost like the crux of the film, which I was really surprised about. And when I saw it, I was like, did I really just see that? And when Sammy discovers that his mum is in love with his sort of family friend, his uncle Benny.
Did you not see that coming then? I saw that from like the first time they were on screen. I was looking at them thinking, hang on a minute, there's something going on here. Really early.
The fact that he was at the dinner table and they said almost at the start, it was a bit like a, oh, who are you? Kind of introduction to him. Like, what are you doing at the table? Like, you're not actually family. And they sort of disguised it as that. I think the fact that they introduced him that way, I thought he's there. There's a reason why he's here. But apart from that, when I saw, so the fact that, which I thought this was a brilliant way, it was more of a show don't tell about making a film or like writing a script. The way that this plot twist was shown was through the fact that Sammy was watching this. He was putting together a family film. Yeah. And cutting it together, and then he discovers it through the video or the film that he's watching. He sees sort of the behavior between his mum and Uncle Benny. And what I thought was brilliant was rather than him, I guess, confronting his mum about this through pages of dialogue or a big conversation, that was all cut. And it was just when his mum was trying to get through to him, was like, what's wrong, you know, why are you sort of holding things against me, he put his mum in a room and just made her watch the video. And I just thought, it just, even her facial expressions and everything, it just told so much without dialogue. And I just thought it was such, like we were saying about lessons in the script department, it was about a lesson of show don't tell. And I thought it was really important.
That, for me, the show don't tell element of that was the thing that tipped me off that this was what was going on, because it was that dinner table that I think is, I don't know if it's Benny's first introduction or if it's if he comes later, but Mitzi is laughing just a little bit too hard at everything he says, and that again is a performance thing, but it's scripted, you know, it's character. That for me was, I was looking at it thinking, okay, yes, it's Seth Rogen. Yes, this guy is funny, but he's not that funny. And she's laughing just a little bit and, you know, kind of gazing, you know, got the kind of the big eyes and gazing at him. And there's a few, I don't know, and to the point where I actually was almost a negative for me, in the sense that I thought that they, when that big, and it is a, oh, amazing sequence, the showing of the film that he's cut of what he's discovered about the two of them, absolute heart of the film. And talk about bringing two threads together, you know, the kind of the family thread and the film thread, and then making the, you know, A and B story interweaving and affecting the other. It's just top tier screenwriting. Like that for me, I was looking at that and thinking, oh, hang on, am I supposed to be surprised about this? Because I thought it was kind of a mistake. But it's interesting that you were surprised about that. So maybe it is just subtle enough, perhaps. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because at the start she is, you know, sort of picking his jokes up and laughing and everything. But yeah, one thing I do think is that, like you were saying, it's bringing two stories together, is the fact that it was such an emotive moment that, for me, the plot twist, because it was like through Sammy's love of film, mm-hmm. he's discovered this like big conflict or destruction what's going to be a destruction between his family, and then what is sort of more sort of obstacles or a new storyline is the fact that Sammy has the choice, or he chooses to not talk to his father or tell his father about this, and he keeps his mother's secret. And I think that was a really sort of a new storyline sort of thrown into the mix, and that's where it, from then on, I guess that was the middle of the act where it changes then on, and that's when he puts away his camera and he's not interested in making films anymore, because in a way we get the feeling that he's put off and he's traumatized by what he's seen.
Because Uncle Boris's prediction comes true. That's the whole thing. You know, Uncle Boris's prediction of you can't do both of these things. It's there. It's right there for him. You know, if you do this, you are going to cause hurt and you will be hurt. And here it is in physical, you know, show don't tell, in physical manifestation. You know, you have hurt somebody and you have uncovered something that perhaps you shouldn't have done. Because of your art. So I think it's you're spot on. That moment is a masterful, absolutely masterful piece of screenwriting. Wonderfully performed by Michelle Williams, Gabriel LaBelle. You know, it's really just spot on. I want to talk about Mitzi for a second, and getting into characters, because I undoubtedly, these are brilliantly constructed characters, really, really interesting, really well performed, as I just said. Mitzi, thwarted artist who gave up her career, put aside her art in some way or another. I found her at once, all at the same time, utterly compelling, utterly sympathetic, totally enthralling, and so irritating. All at the same time. And I don't and I think that's the sign of an excellent, a really well written character, if you're getting all of these conflicting emotions and things like that. I guess I'm wondering, is it just me? Was she annoying, or is she supposed to be annoying? What do you think?
I think she was definitely at the start so impulsive as a character. Even at the start, when there's a tornado, isn't there, or a hurricane, and she packs her kids into the car and she's like, let's go and see. And almost in a way, I was sort of really stunned, because I didn't know what was happening or if something bad was going to happen or something. And that's a very sort of makes very impulsive decisions.
Dramatic.
We go along. Yeah. Yeah. Very sort of dramatic. And yeah, no. But I thought her character just had so much light and so much warmth. And I thought, I really liked the fact that there was this, she was the really supportive one trying to push Sammy to make his films, and she wanted to see what he'd come up with. But I thought her character was really good. And I didn't find her a character annoying. I think because I know her mindset sort of dips here and there as well throughout the film, and sort of her behavior changes. I did find her at times she'd sort of just her eccentricness did come across quite sort of comedic for me. She just sort of would come up with these, when, for example, I think there's a scene when Sammy and his dad are in an argument, basically he's blaming his dad for never letting them settle down, always making them move around, and the mother just kind of comes up with these funny one-liners trying to just calm the situation. And I just thought she was really good. That really worked.
That's so interesting.
The script.
I agree with you. I think it really does work, and I think the character's really brilliantly constructed. But that is exactly the moment where I kind of went, oh god, that's so annoying. In a good way, I felt like I was supposed to be annoyed by her, because they're having this argument effectively about something that she's caused. And she's had this affair, and he's found out, and he hasn't told the dad, but the dad knows, and it's, you know, Bert knows, and it's all, oh god, it's just so awful. And she just stands there and like, I've started therapy. And it's like, oh my, you're such a narcissist. Like, you know, it really
bringing it all back to her again, isn't she? Yeah.
She wanted the attention. I think one of her daughters actually says at one point, it always has to be about you. It has to be about you. And I think it was, and I mean it, and by irritating or annoying, I don't mean that I find in a negative way. I mean it in a massively positive way, because I think, because what wonderful characterization.
The character moved you, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And like, I found her so sympathetic. I totally understood why she felt the way she did. I understood why she felt kind of perturbed and annoyed, and, you know, and why she felt unappreciated. You know, she's had to give up something. And again, you know, trauma from art from trauma, all of these things, it all hits this theme perfectly. And Mitzi is a character there as well that does that. Whereas Bert, on the other hand, has this great love for something that he's very, very good at. And we mentioned, I don't know if it was in the YouTube bit or earlier on, how it's so interesting that he is the way he is about Sammy's. I keep going to call him Spielberg, because, I mean, it's obvious.
I'm the same, literally. I'm holding it in. I'm filtering myself.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting that he says, you know, this is a hobby, and this is what this is, because he in his own way requires support. He requires the support of his whole family to move around with him. And he is this kind of very placid individual, this very kind of, you know, just kind of gentle guy, which is lovely, a lovely character. And but also totally emotionally distant, and totally, you know, we're told often that he's a wonderful man. And I think there's bubblings below the surface there that perhaps not so much. I think he's a really interesting character. I can't quite get a read on him, and I think that's a probably sign of great writing and great performance meeting there. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think I really liked his character, because yeah, his parents just seem like they're always in conflict with their opinions and views, and he did come across very. Like, he was always sort of this working with sort of computers and for this company. And he was always very sort of excited when he get good news to move away. Whereas the others were just like, oh, really? We've got to move again. Whereas he was very sort of, he came across a little bit at times, a little bit cold and dismissive as a character. And that sort of fatherly authoritative figure as well. But no, I thought the combination of the characters, they all just interjected with one another and bounced off each other. They just created so many brilliant conversations, such an interesting story at a scene level. There were so many tones, like tonally created. There was like moments, even though it's a dramatic story with tragic essences tonally, there were little sort of pocket moments of comedic dialogue, like we were saying with Mitzi. I think sort of Sammy and his siblings' time at school, there were sort of moments of comedic dialogue and things. And yeah, I think tonally it really worked. It changed dramatically at different levels. It didn't stay on this same level, which I think is really important for film. I think with sort of writing a script, there has to be sort of a mix of tones in there, otherwise it's not shaped as much, and if you feel like it's not got legs, I guess.
I had an old drama teacher years ago when I was at school. He was absolutely brilliant bloke, Richard Lunn. And he used to say, you need light and shade. You need light and shade to make this work. You can't have the light without the shade. You can't have the shade without the light. And, you know, this film does that so well. You're absolutely right. The tonal kind of shift between those wonderful comedic moments and then literal death, and the death of relationships, and the death of, you know, and breakups and awful kind of teen angst. And you know, the and yet these wonderful comedic moments, and it handles it really well. It handles the shift between them brilliantly, as you said. I'm going to repeat what you said so eloquently. You know, it is a wonderful thing in that sense. But while we're talking about the construction of it, I find it really interesting. This is, again, you know, semi-autobiographical. So we've got in here some references to other Spielberg pictures, and I've got a few of them. This is by no means an exhaustive list, right? But there's a couple of them here, and I wonder how many I'll tell you what they are, and I'm going to ask you a question afterwards because I'm interested in this. So the first one I've got here is there's a great Close Encounters of the Third Kind reference. Mitzi sees the lights coming from underneath the wardrobe door, the kind of the flashing, the different lights, things like that. War of the Worlds, Mitzi chasing the tornado, you know, against Cruise running from danger, there's tears, all this, that, and the other. Indiana Jones throughout, but specifically, you know, Teenage Sammy in The Last Crusade, that kind of reopens that. And then the monkey as well, from Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, that there is this lovely monkey, and you think, and you know, it's interesting to draw that comparison because you think, I assume that monkey existed in Spielberg's life, and then he treats that monkey in Raiders very badly. So I wonder, you know, maybe there's some resentment harbored about monkeys there. Don't know, perhaps.
Do you know, I was going to say, I'm so glad you mentioned this about these sort of, I call them like Easter eggs that were almost like inputted in this film. Because when I was watching it, I was honestly watching thinking, not am I the only one that sees this, but I was drawing this. I said, this, like, for example, when there was the big sort of ball or prom night that Sammy goes to with his girlfriend, I was watching it and I was thinking, this feels a bit like the Enchantment Under the Sea dance from Back to the Future. Or there was also like Mitzi, in terms of her costume, she at one point has a hat that looks just like Indiana Jones's hat, and just things like that. And I was thinking, even like the scouts when they're picking up the scorpions and things, it was just so many small like references, so subtly sort of painted in there.
E.T. when they're riding their bikes and things like that, they're going there. That, I mean, that's just I don't know if it says what that says about me, that I actually thought of Stranger Things before I thought of E.T. I think perhaps the film community I'll be shocked by at this point. And then the last one on my little list there, Saving Private Ryan, and other war pictures that Spielberg's done, alluded to in those, that wonderful moment where he makes that actor, that kid he's got, and he's like, so what, you want me to act? He's like, you got to do some acting. And okay, again, light and shade, you know, but walking through that thing, and he just keeps walking, and he's like, you know that there's that shades of it's so good, isn't it? Like the shades of Schindler's List, the shades of Saving Private Ryan, you know, there's little moments there. Now the question I have for you is, because you noticed them too, I think most people who know about Spielberg noticed these things, did you find them lovely, endearing references to a wonderful career, or did you find yourself trying to play Spielberg bingo, and was it distracting? That's the question.
I love that, Spielberg bingo, that's brilliant. You know what, it wasn't actually distracting. I was so excited when I found these references.
Oh great.
Cool. I know what you mean though, because it does in a way, because if you spotted something, it's, oh no, now I need to go back to the film. But no, it was so heartwarming. I was so glad that they did that. And I thought it was quite subtle as well. Like there was probably so many every other second of little Easter eggs and stuff thrown in there. I love that Spielberg bingo. That's brilliant.
I was playing Spielberg bingo. I only saw it the one time. Maybe if I'd seen it again, I might have stopped doing it, or maybe I would have doubled down. I don't know. But
I think the second time when I went to see it, I might have been playing Spielberg bingo, because the first time that's why I went. That's it. Because the first time I was sort of just enjoying the movie, you know, taking it all in, and then the second time I wanted to go back to see if, I remember saying to my mum, I was like, I want to see if I can sort of pick anything else up from the film. I wanted to see it again for fun, because I enjoyed it, but sure. Actually, yeah, I wanted to see if there was any more sort of hidden meanings that I could cotton on to and stuff. So actually, that makes complete sense.
Spielberg bingo, that's what's going on here. That's so interesting. And I think on that note, you know, I think we both really enjoyed this, and I think that this is, I think this is for sure destined to become looked on as one of Spielberg's greats. Do you think?
Absolutely. I think he's got so many brilliant films that he's written and directed. And it's so nice to hear. I was listening to an interview earlier about how he was saying there are sort of pieces when he writes or directs a film, there are pieces of him.
Yeah,
I can't quote him exactly how he says it, but in all of his movies, and there's part of him in all of his movies. So I think, well, they're all brilliant. I love Indiana Jones and his other films, War of the Worlds, but this one is going to be remembered. And it's so nice to, while it is a film that captures you and draws you in, it's nice that it's a film about him at the heart of it, and with sort of events that happened and things. So I think that's what makes this film really special.
I think you're right. And I just want to leave, I want to end just on one. There's a little quote that was in it, that was written in there, that was, someone says, movies are dreams at some point. And I got goosebumps. It was extraordinary, you know. Movies are dreams, and I think Mitzi says it actually.
It's
early
Mitzi,
on.
Yeah,
and I just thought that is such a wonderfully compelling idea. You know, I to the point where I don't have really anything negative to say about this film. I thought it was just so wonderful, so moving, and you know, there are things, of course, there are always things that could be improved on, but I don't want to talk about them, because I just think it's lovely. Like, I think it's a lovely movie. It's a filmmaker's film, and yes. I do wonder how well received it is by those perhaps who aren't of that, as I said up top. I do wonder, but as somebody who is in that world, as are you, I think it found its audience in us and in others like us. And I think really that's all you can ask for a film like this.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as when I watched it, I loved it because I found I could relate to the main character. I found, as a filmmaker, I found so much of me in that character too. Mm. And also what I loved is that, I think just as a side note in general, sometimes, you know, when we're writing or filmmaking, it is a struggle sometimes. And what I loved is when I went to the cinema to watch this film, it really sort of enlightened so much again about film, and really sort of ignited that passion again. And I went back in the car driving home thinking, I want to go make a film right now. And things. It gave you that sort of motivation and that excitement about films, even though, you know, it's something we love, but it just sort of really brings it back home again for you. So that's what I always remember as well about the film. It really ignites that passion for you.
Millie, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about The Fablemans. This is it's a special film, and it's been a joy to cover it with you. So thank you. If you haven't seen it, remember to jump over to YouTube, find Millie's review early on over there. Forms the first sort of half of this conversation, I suppose you'd say. And there are many other reviews as well. You can have a look around on our back catalogues. We talk about some Spielberg stuff on there, so you can do that. Millie, thank you once again.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, come back. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for coming along, Millie, and to everyone else, thank you for listening. And we'll see you again soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.